Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You are listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Lisa Rabel.
And we're going to get right into it. Lisa, let's hear your hot take.
My hot take is that sales and marketing is not departmental in organizations, that it's everybody's responsibility in an organization because everybody in the organization touches revenue.
I love this conversation already because it is something that I have been just like, so frustrated by, and I'm seeing it in organizations of all sizes that we have sales and we have marketing, and sometimes in a highly functional, healthy organization, there are two departments that play nice, but most of the time they are two departments that kind of hate each other, like a frenemy vibe for sure. And I think that the modern day customer is not going to accept the marketing sales dichotomy that we've built in our businesses.
Not at all, because in the 30 years I've been doing sales and or marketing professionally, it's changed a lot, a lot, a lot.
So take me through it, because you actually went a step further than I just did, where I said, you know, it's two departments who are, you know, kind of frenemies, you know, enemies to lovers, whatever word you want to use there as you think about it. But you said they're not departments. Take us through that.
So what's happening is that with online experiences, like your website and your social media and all the things that you do online, the studies show that anywhere between 50 to 90% of the buying decision-making process is done before a prospect reaches out to a salesperson or to your company. And so marketing and sales have to be aligned. Because if they contact you and it's different than what marketing put out there and you're a salesperson, you've lost the sale.
I am doing a research study right now, and we didn't talk about this. Like I always tell people, I hear the hot take for the first time when I'm on with a guest. So everything you're hearing, y'all, is live. I'm hearing it for the first time. But I'm working on a research study right now because that's what my company does, where we conduct research. We try to be like the voice of the customer, the advocate of the customer in the room. You know, when all those decisions are getting made. And I'm doing a study right now. And one of the things that I am finding fascinating is that every single person who's coming through our study, and we've talked to about 20 people now, say that they have already made a decision before they fill out a form, pick up the phone, talk to a chatbot of whether or not they think you're a good fit. And they're simply using the sales conversation or the onboarding conversation to confirm their existing perceptions of your brand and what you can do for them.
Exactly. And what's interesting is that, you know, back in the 90s, Bob Berg coined the phrase know, like, trust, you know, like K-N-O-W, like know, like, trust. And I think what's happening is that what these sales departments and marketing departments don't realize is that it's a seamless process. It has to be aligned, because if marketing is the know and the like, you have to know you exist, like what you say. And then from the like to trust, what you were just saying is the sales process. It has to be 100% aligned. It's seamless. And what organizations that I'm finding is I've had a couple of customers like this. They thought they had an email problem, or they thought they had a website problem, when actually they had a customer experience problem, because they didn't think about the fact that, you know, sales and marketing is one thing, but like production is like, are they doing it? Do they have capacity? Do they have the parts to sell it on the time frame that the salespeople said it? Shipping, is it getting there on time? Is it going to the right address? Customer service, when there's calls, there's a problem. Every person in your organization touches the revenue. And people aren't, they think that sales and marketing is in charge of the growth of the business, when it's not. It's actually literally everybody that works for that organization is in charge of growing the business in one way or another.
Yeah. And longtime listeners will know that one of my like mic drop phrases I love to drop is you're either revenue generating or revenue responding. there is no other option. Like, it does not matter what role you hold in the organization. You can be accounting specialist number one. And all of a sudden, you have to realize that you have a job because there is revenue that's being generated. Your job is to respond to that revenue. And when you start to phrase it as, if we're all revenue responsive in some way, customers are the drivers of that revenue. And I think especially today's modern customer has gotten so used to the seamless experiences that they get in their consumer lives. Right. They are taking those expectations into their business to business lives. I was just talking with someone about he wants to build a CRM that basically functions like the Pizza Hut pizza tracker. And your customer can watch as the delivery goes from, okay, we've started this process, you've put in your order. Okay, the proposal is ready, the proposal is signed. Now we're moving into delivery. I can watch my pizza from Pizza Hut go from the store to my front door. And having that transparency, but he's a B2B service delivery person. He's more concerned about, you know, these big projects, not a consumer product. But he's getting a lot of positive feedback from customers who want to watch through the window while the pizza gets made and follow the car along DoorDash while it gets delivered, even when we're talking about boring old B2B stuff.
No, I think that is interesting because I literally just did a blog a few weeks ago about the fact that the reason that people aren't closing sales, like they get a customer, they're interested, their marketing is good, and then they freeze in the sales process because the customer doesn't know what to do next. And this goes right along with your research, because what's happening is that if people understand what the next move is, just like the CRM that's being created, they're more willing to be patient if there's a delay. If you say have a customer says, yeah, I'm ready to buy, and it takes you 3 days to reply to them and say, oh, well, here's the contract and the invoice or whatever your next step is, and there's a delay, even if it's the fact that you have the flu, it's more of a, hey, something came up. It's going to take a couple more days than I expected. You know, I appreciate your patience. People are going to be patient. But it's the problem that the lack of communication is causing all of these great sales that are almost going to happen to not happen because we're not telling the customer what's next. And it sounds like the CRM is kind of that, like, well, this is what's next kind of a concept. So I think it's a fabulous idea.
Yeah, somebody go do it if he doesn't get to it first, because I do think that it is something that is sorely missing. And it really has a customer-centric vibe to it, because one of the things that I worry about when we're having these conversations about sales and marketing, and I'm sure you see it too, we create journeys that are for ourselves, right? So like I'm in the middle of redesigning my website and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, like where do I want to put a form fill? Where do I want to gate some content? Where do I want to do these things? And I actually had to stop myself and say, wait a minute, what benefit does the customer get from me gating this video about a customer testimonial or whatever I was working on? And the answer was nothing. There was no benefit to the customer to them giving me their email in that moment. And we have to think about our customers giving us something as a value exchange, right? We might not be exchanging cash yet, but we are exchanging something of value, their time, their attention, their email, their future time, their future attention. There's all these like death by a thousand cuts of effort that we make customers jump through when honestly, they just want to shake us and be like, just shut up and take my money. Just say yes to
me
being
a
customer.
Just help me. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, I've been on sales calls with sales guys who, like, they have a process that they're going to follow. They got data they got to collect for their forecast. Even though the customer said yes, they're going to make them sit through all of this stuff just to say yes. And it's like, dude, they've already said yes. Just like, take yes for an answer, my guy. Like, let's go forward.
Well, and what they're not doing is they're not asking for yeses in ways that are really subtle to get the customer already thinking that they're working with them. So I'm going to give you a perfect example is that I have a client who they fill out RFPs. And so the RFP is very specific. Like you have to, all I want is this. But the customer's like, but if we just do this, it's going to break or it's not going to last or whatever. So you need to do this as well. So what we did was we fill out the RFP exactly the way that whether it's a municipality or a hospital or whoever is asking for the RFP, the request for proposal, in case somebody listening doesn't know what that is, they fill out it exactly, but then they put an addendum in and say, here's where I think you're missing some things, and here's 10 points. I'm going to give you the top 4 or 5, and I'm not going to tell you how much it's going to cost extra, because that's bit them in the butt before, because then they put it out for bid again with all the addendum stuff in it. And so it's a matter of giving them the going the extra mile and making sure that the project is done properly, but out without giving away all the answers to the test. And so it makes that concept above and beyond without like not following the rules of the RFP. And so you have to find ways to get those little yeses along the way. Like one of my favorite questions when I'm talking to a prospect is, are there any red flags? And that's the exact way I need people to say it, because everybody knows what a red flag is. And if they say yes, you can take that objection of whatever they say immediately and rectify it. They don't walk away thinking, having some kind of a concern or objection that you just don't know about. You can think the conversation went fabulously. And all of a sudden they're walking away going, gosh, I don't know, because that person doesn't have XYZ, right?
Yeah.
And then if they say, no, there are no red flags, you automatically got your first yes. In the sales
and it's the psychology of it, because people do not like to change, right?
Right.
And that's just not like just in general of like changing behaviors and patterns. We like to stand by what we've said before. And by saying there's no red flags, you just said we're good to go forward, right? It's so funny that you mentioned that example. When I was in college and I was interviewing for, you know, my big girl job, I had a question that I would ask at the end of every interview, because, you know, when they're like, oh, do you have any questions? And honestly, looking back, I cannot believe that I was brave enough to even ask this question. But I would say, based on our conversation today and everything that you've learned about me, is there any reason that you think that I might not be the best candidate for this job? And can I address those concerns right now? And every single time, people would sit up straighter and they would be like, okay. This girl is serious. She's accountable. She's open to feedback. And almost every time they would say, no, you're fantastic. You're fabulous. So in their mind, I just advanced down the line because there was no red flags. There was no reason that I wouldn't be the best candidate for this job. I just positioned myself. I just marketed myself as the best candidate in their mind simply by asking a question.
Yeah. And I love that, because when I was looking for jobs, it feels like a million years ago now, but it was, for me, I would say, like, I do have some questions about your organization. And I would give them some of the research that I had. Is that, like, is this still correct? And according to your website, you said this is da 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 da. And they would, the same thing. They'd sit up straighter and go, oh, wait, like, she's researching us just as much as we're researching her. Mm-hmm. And it makes a much more solid impression. And I do that now with my prospects. I do that now with the people that I work with. It's like, okay, I know you're seeing if I'm your best candidate to be your marketing strategist, your consultant, your part-time marketing director, whatever they're hiring me for, depending upon which service it is. And I'll say, okay, well, this is what I found when I stalked you, basically. You know, this is what I noticed that you haven't posted in 3 months on Facebook. Is there a reason that you haven't done that? And like, or like on your website, it's really difficult for me to sign up for a form. You know what I mean? And so like, it takes me above and beyond just I'm one of many people that they're interviewing for a position. And it could be, whether you're a small business owner or you're looking for a job, it applies to both of those things.
Yeah, it's the same underlying human psychology of how we communicate to other people that we care and that we are interested and that we value their time and their attention and their experiences on the other side of the table. I do want to go back to your RFP story. Because, and I've told this story in the podcast before, but we're like 100 episodes in and it's been a while. I actually had like a transformational experience with a client in that same kind of situation. It wasn't an RFP, but she had very specific things that she wanted done, right? So she kind of gave me the laundry list of like, I need this, this, and this, and I need it fast, which is, you know, what they all say. However, I knew, we should do phase one, phase two, phase three, kind of like a waterfall effect. We'll do one, then we'll do two, then we'll do three. But because she wanted it fast, I said, I mean, it's okay. I guess we can do all three at the same time. And so we did all three at the same time. And then we got to the end of that presentation where I'm delivering the results of our research. And she goes, oh, it's too bad that we didn't investigate, I don't even remember what topic, something, in this part of the research. And I said to her, well, we would have if we would have done like a phased approach, like phase one, phase two, because we would have learned like, oh, we need to look into that a little bit more in phase two and phase three. And she looked me dead in the eyes. And let me tell you, I was like 24. So a true child when I got this looks me dead in the eyes and said, Alyssa, I am hiring you for your expertise. It is your job to tell me if something that I am asking for means that the project is not going to be successful. If you were a carpenter and I hired you to build a table and my specifications meant my table had two legs and wasn't going to stand, you would never build me that table, would you? You would say, I can't do it because tables need three or four legs. You're asking right. for two. And I have taken that lesson with me my entire career because these clients, they are looking for your expertise. Right. That is why they have come to the table. And if they're talking to you, odds are good they've already decided you're worth talking to and probably an expert in whatever you're selling. Mm-hmm. Do not show them the disrespect of not giving them that addendum of the extra value and your expertise. That's what they're looking for.
Right. Because quite honestly, if they knew what to do, they don't need you.
Exactly.
And so be bold enough to say yes and. You know, don't say no, you're wrong. Say yes. And I also believe that this is necessary. I have not taken on clients because they're like, all I need is this. I just need you to make me more money. Those are not my ideal customers. My ideal customers are the ones who say, I know I need marketing. I don't know where to start. And I need you to tell me what to do because I want to do it. I just don't know what to do. Those are my ideal customers because they're coachable. They want to learn. They're eager. They're more interested in their employees and their customers than they are about their bottom line. You know what I mean? So like it's the psychology of the sales process is not just, I need to make another sale. It's like, is this customer going to be the right customer for me? And am I going to do enough with this customer and be honest to be able to provide them the best possible value that they're paying me for? And it's a lesson that you learn the hard way in your 20s. I had a couple lessons like that in my 20s. And so, but it's not a matter of like, well, that big old B, right? She's just like, whatever. Like, no, this is your accountability aspect of it. And the fact that you took the feedback and used it, I love that. Because if we did that with the feedback that we get, instead of being angry all the time that you got a negative review or whatever, it's like, okay, then how can I improve?
Yeah. Well,
positive intent, right?
Always. Yes. It's been over a decade and I still work with her and she still refers me to other people. She's one of my best like lead sources. And it was because I took that feedback and not saying like she has to do what I say, but it is my job to present the pros and cons and the decision to let her make an informed decision. It's my job to bring the information to the table so she can make an informed decision. So when you're thinking about like, let's get really practical, maybe practical is the wrong word. Let's talk about what we think would be ideal. So if we kind of agree, we're in wild agreement that the customer expects a seamless experience from marketing to sales to delivery, retention, whatever you want to call it on the post-sales side. What is the path to making this happen? Like, is it just time to abolish these departments and create one unified like customer experience revenue team? Like, what is the thing that we need to do?
So what I did with a customer is I brought all the department heads in, you know, the head of, you know, the service providers, the head of customer service, the head of shipping and production and like all of them. And I put them all in one room. And I said, what's missing? In your opinion, what's missing? Because what's happening is that if we just rely it for the C-suites or just the management level, we don't bring in all of the departments that touch on the revenue, then we're missing out. The receptionist was in there. Like every person that talks to customers or has some kind of a thing with customers, the leads were in there. And then what happened was the next time we did that same exact meeting, they brought in their teams and we met departmentally. Okay, this is the question. And we're in shipping. And like, what's the problem? What do we need from operations? What do we need from production? Like, and those people are there. And it literally, we changed the entire customer experience to be where they were getting like, and these are huge projects. So this might seem like a low number, but these are big number projects. They're getting like one or two leads a month to one or two leads a week because we changed things and like people started hearing about them more. And so it really helped understand. Another perfect example is I have a manufacturing client who, again, builds pretty big projects. But like once this project is installed, there's really not a reason for them to do anything, but there's replacement parts that need to go in for this project. And this is one of the early mistakes when you first start a business. So what I did is I said, okay, pay me half now and half later. And then so we worked on this thing. And I said, well, why don't you invite your production manager in on a marketing meeting and see what he has to say? And then I want you to give these parts away for free, like a small like replacement kit, to pass customers and just say thank you for being a customer. They're between what the production manager told them that as that he touches your product every single day. You don't think that he's got some kind of an idea of like how to sell this better or market it better or package it better or whatever. They increased sales so much that he didn't pay me the rest of my fee. Cause he's like, we reach beyond our goals. And so I'm like, well, this is gonna teach me to collect all the money ahead of time. But and so it's one of those things where like you make an assumption that just because somebody works in shipping or somebody works in production, that they're not thinking about the company and the product when they are. And so it's a matter of bringing those people together and just listening to them. Two things are going to happen. The first thing that's going to happen is you might get some really, really great ideas that you never thought about before. And the second thing that's going to happen is that you give every employee a voice in how the business is being run and how it's going to grow, which creates retention in that organization because they feel valued and they have a voice in the organization instead of just like, go do your job and like, don't bother me. So that's going a little bit deeper and that's how I would do it. Well, that's actually how I have done it in several different organizations.
I think that I love that because I think that's an important point that a lot of us will miss because I'm sitting here, I made a note as you were talking about, you know, bringing in all these department heads and I'm like, okay, we got a turf war brewing. I can smell it, you know, from a mile away. At right. Some of these organizations where it's like, okay, well, sales wants better leads and marketing wants more budget and the CFO wants to cut the bottom line. So now I've got all these people who have their own agendas in the room. And I had a podcast guest on, oh God, it was a while ago, who came in and he talked about a very similar meeting where they came in and they wanted to do something for the customer to improve their marketing. And they had this great idea that was going to work and it was validated and they felt really good about it. And then one of the department heads stood up and said, I can't support this idea. It doesn't feed into my KPIs. And everyone just kind of like sat up and was like, oh. And then my podcast guest realized he was like the minority in the room. Everyone agreed because they had the same, like, it doesn't feed into my KPIs. However, when you truly step back and think about what is in it for everyone in the room? Back to the conversation about like everyone has to touch revenue, whether you're a production manager or someone who works in the service department. We all are in this business because we are here to serve the customer. And if our KPIs aren't reflecting that, right, we are not going to properly incentivize this behavior. So I guess my question to you would be, one, how do you prevent a turf war? And two, how do you make sure that somebody owns this with the right mentality and creates a space where people feel like they can do the right thing without hurting their own future growth and development?
First of all, so I have these, I make it fun. So it's over here, but I have these like little yellow smiley face balls that go in the middle of a conference table. And at any point in time, when anybody says something kind of that sabotages or like is super negative, you have every right. I ask HR first, I promised, that you can throw these like little rubber balls at that person. Now, like I've been sassy in these conversations and like I got a whole bunch of yellow rubber balls thrown at me at the whiteboard, which is kind of fun. But it's a matter of just not making it so serious. Because when somebody comes in and they're afraid like they're going to get like reprimanded instead of like it's a free flowing space, I've actually had somebody like leave the room and then come back in. Okay, this is not the mentality we want. I want you to get up. I want you to take a couple of deep breaths and I want you to walk through that door with an attitude of like, everybody is here to help. I've literally had a sales and marketing manager stand at the whiteboard next to each other. I feel like this is like when my mom and dad used to make me hold hands with my sisters when we got in a fight on the couch until we made friends. Same concept is that I made them answer five questions. What company do you work for? Okay. What is the role of your position? And it's usually growth of the company, right? Something along those lines. And then I say, like, who are the three departments that help feed into what you're doing? Like all this other stuff, right? And then I have them stand back and I'm like, look, you guys are on the same team, trying to for the same goal, driving on the same road, yet you're trying to run each other off the road. Can you please tell me why? And it's always because of, I'm not sure if I can swear in this podcast, but it's all because they're covering their asses.
Do it.
They're covering their own ass. They're not thinking about anybody else, but like keeping their jobs.
Right.
And that goes back to leadership and the CEO and not having that environment, that culture of being able to say what they think and have that guy say, I disagree with you. It's okay to disagree because I tell my customers all the time, everything that comes out of my face is not gold, but it's at least something that we can start working with, right? So like creating and fostering that culture of feeling safe to say your opinions. And then it comes down to compensation, right? Because every marketing manager I've ever met thinks salespeople are overpaid. So what then I do is I actually make marketing department people go on sales calls, and sales calls people sit in on marketing conversations. And so they can see what the other is facing. And the other thing I do is I make the sales and marketing people have a weekly meeting to talk about what they heard last week out in the field. Because if you're a marketing person, and I've been that person sitting in my office trying to create marketing, but I'm not out in the field listening to customers and prospects, I don't know how to create the marketing. I need sales to come and say, this is what they're concerned about. These are the problems that we're solving. This is what's new in the industry, all the other things. And then that marketing is going to be so much more productive. And I think salespeople need to understand that an idea doesn't just like pop in your head and it's golden and you run with it, the creative process takes so much time and energy and effort to come up with something that's actually going to work, a new campaign. So I think the whole point of this very long answer to your question is understanding each other's positions is the best way to get clarity and cooperation between departments.
Considering the people that you know or aspire to know, who else should we be paying attention to?
All right. I'm a bit of a fangirl of Simon Sinek, and here's why. I saw his video on the Golden Circle a long time ago. And if you've never seen it, just go to YouTube and Google Simon Sinek Golden Circle, because it's brilliant. And it explains marketing in a very easy way. And I think that's why I like him so much, is that he tells the truth. He doesn't sugarcoat stuff. And the other thing I really love about him is that he talks about it in like plain language. Like he's not expert. He doesn't speak expert. He speaks plain language and what he does. The other one that I really love is it's a book that I've read probably, I don't know, at least a half a dozen times now. It's called The Question Behind the Question, QBQ by John G. Miller. And it's a really good way of getting yourself to stop looking at other people and how it affects you, and start looking inward and how you can help others. It's brilliant. I just read it again last weekend. So,
and if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to have a conversation or talk about the future of marketing and sales and go to market, where can they find you online?
The two best places are going to be my website, rebelgirlmarketing.com. And then you just Lisa Rabel on LinkedIn would be great. There's a Rebel Girl marketing page too, but LinkedIn and my website would be the best two places to find out what I'm up to.
And if you are looking for me, you can find me on LinkedIn. So just search Alyssa Nolte. And if you find the Notorious Plate Killer, you know you found the right one. I'm also on Substack. You can search Alyssa Likes to Talk or alyssanolte.substack.com. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation. I think it's one that we have to just keep making sure that people are really thinking about. What does it mean to deliver for the customer? What does it mean to build a cohesive experience and keep them from they like you, they know you, they like you, they trust you, and what that means in today's modern sales. So thank you so much for bringing this important conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
IPVanish protects every device you own. Your phone, your laptop, your smart TV, If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. And with no device limits, one account covers everything. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.